Blog Talk Radio.
Lovely listeners out there, welcome to Zariana Radio. This is your host and humble storyteller, once again, Evan Poss, and I am here with Daniel Michael in the studio on another beautiful morning, beautiful summer morning, but perhaps not summer for too much longer. You wouldn't know it by today, but you know the seasons are changing, as surely as anything. How you doing, Dan?
Doing okay, and soon everybody will be going, it's too cold, just like right now they're going, it's too hot, so.
Well, enjoy it while it lasts, folks, because, yeah, it's gonna freeze over in a little bit before you even know it. You know, I never really like complaining about the weather too much, just because, you know, I know it's some polar opposite weather, I'm going to be saying the exact opposite. You know, you just got to enjoy it while it's here. Enjoy the rain, enjoy the sunshine, enjoy the cold, enjoy the wind. Mm-hmm. You know, every one of those forces of nature is a blessing. And they make it interesting. You know, you got to love it. You got to love it. So that first piece I read by Emily Dickinson, it's around 1880. And it's short, and I think it deserves another reading. So here we are. We shall find the cube of the rainbow. Of that there is no doubt. But the arc of a lover's conjecture eludes the finding out. You know, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Something about like the image. We shall find the cube of the rainbow. You know, that makes me think of like those mathematical terms. You know, cubed is to the third power. And if you just let your mind go for a little bit, waxing on what a rainbow to the third power would look like in your imagination, you know, that's some very interesting stuff right there.
And it's funny they say rainbow because you and I both here, I think you did as well, we actually saw, what, two or three rainbows recently here in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, the past week it was, you know, the rain was off and on, and then we'd walk outside or drive home or whatever, and there's this gorgeous rainbow, you know, end to end. It's beautiful.
they were big and bright enough that people were taking pictures of them. And, you know, sometimes those things don't work out, but people were posting them on Facebook, and you could see these, you know, vibrant, brightly colored rainbows, and they were humongous. They were about as big and clear as I ever remember in my life seeing them. So to me, I think, you know, those are good signs.
Absolutely. And, you know, that kind of goes back to the weather, too, just like, you know, the synthesis of rain and sun yields a rainbow. But in this little piece of verse, the cube of the rainbow, we will find that. You know, it sounds so elusive, so far beyond our capacity for comprehension. But, you know, well over 100 and, you know, about 150 years ago, Emily Dickinson was convinced that even that we would find. But the arc of a lover's conjecture eludes the finding out. Perhaps forever. You know, you'll never know, but it's a beautiful little piece of verse. And as soon as I read it, it really, you know, felt the resonance there. Excellent. Exquisite. So, for the show today, it's not just one theme. I've got a couple different things in mind. So, you know, we'll hop around a little bit. There's a flow to it. Have no fear. I'm going to be reading some poetry. Going to be reading some stories about gypsies. Favorite topic of mine. And perhaps a piece or two about dreaming. And Dan actually did his show yesterday, the Main Street Universe show, was on lucid dreaming. And, you know, so we might carry a little bit of that theme over into today. You know, because, you know, I'm thinking about what I'm going to do for the show the night before and, you know, what sort of stuff I want to read and what's been on my mind. And sometimes, you know, like this week, it's just hard for me to pick like a single topic that I want to talk about. Because there's certain pieces that I've read recently that, you know, just really strike me. And, you know, I don't want to just like stick to some cookie cutter format. Like, I want to read what I want to read. And I think you guys will enjoy it. Each one is a beautiful piece, and, you know, it's like, it just brings me joy to share it. That's what it comes down to. So, in future weeks, you know, we might, you know, some of them will have a little bit more structure, you know, thematic structure. Some of them will have a little bit less. This one is a little bit less, say, it's a little bit more freeform. There's still a flow to it. There's still some common themes. And we'll talk about those. But just like some of the, just like the idea of poetry itself is one idea that has really been on my mind recently. The essence of poetry, the art of poetry. So, and I've been reading a little bit more poetry than I have in the past, and, you know, so I've been finding some new pieces that I'm really enjoying. So that's what we're going to do. Couple pieces. We've got some Rudyard Kipling, one of my favorite writers. We've got possibly a folktale from India. Like I said, some gypsy stories, one of which is by one of my favorite writers. His name is Norman Spinrad. He's a contemporary science fiction writer. Absolutely amazing. His big works are The Void Captain's Tale and Child of Fortune. Two fantastic works for those who are interested. And he basically writes like a contemporary... Well, it's not contemporary. It actually takes place... You know, it is science fiction, but it's called The Last of the Romani. so you'll very much enjoy that. Possibly a piece by Jorge Luis Borges, the great Argentinian writer, a piece on poetry. And before we jump into any of this, I'm going to pass it back over to Dan. There's lots of new and exciting stuff going on at the Main Street Universe Network, and he is going to give you the lowdown.
Yes, and I would also like to welcome, speaking of Romani gypsies, Kevin Baird is in the chat room. So I just saw him logging in, and good to see him. He said he just got in last night in Ohio and has his computer, his laptop up and running.
Hey, excellent. Best of wishes, Kevin. Glad you're listening.
And as well, when we were mentioning all that talk of the rainbows and sun and everything, because out here in Cafe Fairfax in the studio, I have Kevin's Horizon Oracle deck that he created here. And the card I picked, the second one, was the setting sun card, about looking towards the west for inspiration and looking for, you know, the power of light and sun and all of the things, as this is the season of the king and the father and the, you know, the summer and the sun and all of that. So it's looking to that power.
And moving towards the harvest. The sun, you know, the sun in this, of the seasons is indeed setting. You know, the great cycle that mirrors the cycle that happens every day is, you know, slowly, surely coming to its close. And what happens at, you know, at that sunset, at the end of the day, that's when we have the harvest. That's when we make the big meal, the big feast, the celebration, you know, on that inevitable close. So, good card. I like it.
Yep, and so that's the setting sun card. And that can be found, Kevin Baird is found at www.templeofgaia.com. And his deck that he created is an oracle card deck. We'll also be reading from the tarot today because we're going to be talking about gypsies. So we'll be doing a little oracle and tarot back and forth today, as well as some myth and some drums. So I'll get to www.templeofgaia.com, sorry, and even Kevin Baird can be found there, and his cards, the Horizon, on the Horizon Oracle deck. And we also want to remind you that there is a show on Friday evenings called Walking on the Sidewalk with Kevin Baird as the host, and we also have our flagship show, Main Street Universe, which is on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., and of course, you're listening to Zarayana Radio every Thursday, Eastern Time, 11 a.m. And now back to Evan and the importance and value of myth in our lives.
All right. So this first piece is one that I'm perhaps not as familiar with as I should be on the, you know, sort of academic intellectual level. I couldn't tell you all the references in it. I don't know much about its historical value, except that I know that it has incredible historical value and is known as one of the greatest pieces of poetry in the English language. It's called Ode to a Green Urn, and many of you may be familiar with it. I'm not sure. I feel like this is a piece that was, you know, probably a few generations back was just standard teaching for high school and college. It's like a lot of stuff that is no longer standard for my generation.
Classical education, as they call it, which sometimes be called a pagan education.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things that, you know, I feel like the generations before me have, you know, they were the staples, and they just don't get taught anymore. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. But if you really like it, you really love it, and you have a passion for it, you seek it out on your own. That's the way I see it. They don't teach us as much, so responsibility is on ourselves, you know, to construct our own education. So, without further ado, Ode to a Grecian Urn. Thou still unravished bride of quietness, thou foster child of silence and slow time, sylvan historian, who canst thus express a flowery tale more sweetly and our rhyme. What leaf-fringed legend haunts about thy shape, of deities or mortals, or of both? In Tempe, or the dales of Arcady, what men or gods are these? What maidens loth? What mad pursuit? What struggle to escape? What pipes and timbrels? What wild ecstasy? Heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. Therefore, ye soft pipes, play on. Not to the sensual ear, but more endeared, pipe to the spirit ditties of no tone. Fair youth beneath the tree, thou canst not leave thy song, nor ever can thy trees be bare. Bull lover, never, never canst thou kiss, though whinny near the goal. Yet do not grieve, she cannot fade, though thou hast not thy bliss. Forever wilt thou love, and she be fair. Ah, happy, happy boughs, that cannot shed your leaves, nor ever bide the spring adieu. And happy melodist, unwearied, forever piping songs, forever new. More happy love, more happy, happy love, forever warm and still to be enjoyed, forever panting and forever young, all breathing human passion far above, that leaves a heart high sorrowful and cloyed, a burning forehead and a parching tongue. Who are these that come to the sacrifice? To what green altar, O mysterious priest, leadest thou that heifer lowing at the skies, and all her silken flanks with garlands dressed? What little town by river or seashore, or mountain built with peaceful citadel, is emptied of this folk, this pious morn? And what little town thy streets forevermore will silent be, and not a soul to tell why thou art desolate can ever return? O Attic shape, fair attitude with bread of marble men and maidens overwrought, with forest branches and the trodden weed, thou, silent form, dost tease us out of thought, as doth eternity, cold pastoral. When old age shall this generation waste, thou shalt remain, in midst of other woe than ours, a man to man, a friend to man, to whom thou sayest, beauty is truth, truth, beauty. That is all ye need, that is all ye know on earth, and all ye need to know. And except for a couple little slips of the tongue, that is John Keats's immortal Ode to a Grecian Urn.
And I'd also like to give a shout out to two listeners that we have listening, and that is hello, Lexi and Taylor. And thank you for joining us here today on Zeliana Radio.
All right. So, that felt good to read. That is just an exquisite piece of poetry. I'm not going to sit here and butcher it. It speaks for itself. It speaks in the language of myth and poetry and archetypes. And I will just let it speak for itself there. Now, let's read another piece of verse. Let's go to Rudyard Kipling, the great British writer from India,
familiar with MFA a little bit.
Right. Many of you will be familiar with Kipling. He's the author of The Jungle Book, which we should all be familiar with. Thank you, Walt Disney, you know, educating the masses in whatever possible way. Sometimes, as Dan says. Well, you know, no doubt he got his name out there, and now all of our generation knows who Kipling is, although honestly, the truth is, we probably wouldn't otherwise. You know, it's like a lot of these fairy tales, you know, are truly a Disney generation. It's, as I've said on a previous show, I'm going to leave my opinion on that unspoken. And just go straight for the nectar here. This is a piece of verse called The Gypsy Trail. White moth to the closing bine, and bee to the open clover, and a gypsy blood to the gypsy blood, ever the wide world over. Ever the wide world over, lass, ever the trail held true, over the world and under the world, and back at last to you. Out of the dark of the Gorgio camp, out of the grime and the gray, morning waits at the end of the world, gypsy, come away. The wild boat to the sun-dried swamp, the red crane to a reed, and the Romany lass to the Romany lad, by the tie of the roving breed. The pied snake to the rifted rock, the buck to the stony plain, and the Romany lass to the Romany lad, and both to the road again. Boat to the road again, again, out on a clean sea track. Follow the cross of the gypsy trail, over the world and back. Follow the Romany patteran, north where the bluebirds sail. And the bows are gray with the frozen spray, and the masts are shod with mail. Follow the Romany patteran, sheer to the austral light, where the besom of God is the south wild wind, sweeping the sea floors white. Follow the Romany patteran, west to the sinking sun, till the junk sails lift through the houseless drift, and the east and the west are one. Follow the Romany patteran, east where the silence broods, by a purple wave on an opal beach, in the hush of the Mahim woods. The wild hawk to the windswept sky, the deer to the wholesome wold, and the heart of a man to the heart of a maid, as it was in the days of old. The heart of a man to the heart of a maid, light of my tents, be fleet. Morning waits at the end of the world, and the world is all at our feet. And this, my lovely listeners, is why I love Kipling. Absolutely adore it. Ah, a beautiful piece. Sings to my soul, as I'm sure it sings to yours. The Gypsy Trail. A Romany lass to a Romany lad, ever the wide world over.
What do you think is the lesson of that tale to take with you in modern life, like applying it to now?
Throw it to the winds.
Right.
Throw it to the winds. Your cares, your worries, your anxieties, your nervousness, your discontent, everything holding you back. Throw it to the wind, you know.
And realize life is but a dream.
and follow the trail. Follow the path. You know, because fate or the fates or destiny or the stars or God, the powers that be, and there's no denying this, have a certain love for those who can just throw it all to the wind, you know, and fall back into their hands. And, you know, I don't want to discourage anyone from quitting their day job or anything like that. You know, there's a certain you know, it speaks to the modern world. We have responsibilities, you know, you can't live without money. There's all these different things, you know, especially if you want to raise a family, you know, takes a certain level of responsibility. But, you know, the other side of that is that we can't live our lives just always in the pursuit of the word security. You know, that's kind of what I think. That's what I take away from it. That's my opinion. You have to live your life in the pursuit of happiness, not the pursuit of security.
Yeah.
Because life is too short for that, and there's nothing secure about it.
Yep.
And in fact, if you can be insecure in anything, if you're going to be realistic about it, well, the only thing we can be secure of is the fact that we all die someday. I hate to be morbid, but death and taxes. Amen. So how are we going to live our lives? You know, this is it. I was just talking to my friend Jeffrey last night about this. You know, life is somewhat like a play. You know, many, many great sages have said so. And who are we but actors? We, you know, the actors come and go. The play goes on eternally. The show must go on. The show never ends, folks. It never ends. Actors come and go. You know, we have our moments upon the stage. You know, each of us has our moment of glory upon the stage of life. We're actors, nothing more. You know, let's really think about it here. Reflect on what this world is, especially now more so than ever. We know that we're on a single planet. We know we're all a bunch of human beings. We know life is fleeting. We know we can't put a finger on consciousness and nail it down. We don't know what it is. We possess it. We pick up these signals like, you know, biological antenna. And, you know, that consciousness that we possess, that's the one ubiquitous thing. That's the stream that runs through it all. But these bodies that channel that consciousness, actors upon a stage. And what do we do with it? Right now, we are alive and on the stage. The curtain is up. The curtain is up, folks. The curtain's been raised. The play is going on even as we speak. The whole universe is watching. So what do we do? What do we act? What role do we play? What is our part? And, you know, whether or not that's written in the stars is irrelevant. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that is for us to choose. Each and every one of us gets to play our role. That is our free will. This is our moment to shine. You are on the stage now. Every one of you listening out there. And every one of you not listening, because Lord knows there's so many people out there who are not listening. But I speak to them too. We are on the stage. Now is the moment to shine. What will you do with it? What will you do with it? It's only a moment, folks. It goes in the blink of an eye before you know it. our time as actors will have passed.
And the card I draw?
And Dan is shuffling tarot cards right now, so he might have something for us.
Is my question was
the high? Sorry, tell your question.
Oh yeah, according to what you were talking about, I'm saying, and this is how we should approach saying that what you're talking about is deep intuitive wisdom, as well as I picked this one, kind of fell out of the deck, and this is the Lovers card.
The lovers stumble out of the deck. They just sort of, you know, fell out of it, all willy-nilly like, without a care in the world. But, you know, that was inadvertent, you know. And that's the sort of thing that cannot be predicted. The lovers, you know, just fall in and out of this play, this drama. And it is a drama. It is a drama. You know, let's not forget that. All our woes and all our glory, all of our sorrow and pain and fear, and all of our bliss and ecstasy. We think it's our own. We think it's only us experiencing it. It's not. This is the cosmic drama. You know, this is just a part of the play. If you can let go of it, if you can let go, you know, so much the better. And so much more your ability to play the role. Because you realize it. We're just actors. We, you know, if we don't feel like we're playing the part that we're meant to play, then that's upon us. We know. We can change that. We can bring whatever we want. Each of us has that complete freedom, that total freedom, to make the play our own, to claim it for ourselves, not be at the whim of some other director, you know, some great director in the sky, who's up there anyway, you know. In my opinion, at least, I feel like there's some, you know, in a manner of speaking, a great director in the sky. But do not give up your freedom to play the part that you feel you should play. And more often than not, it's not the great director in the sky who keeps playing the role that we're meant to play. Often it's the opposite. You know, that's when we really do tune in and, you know, come into ourselves. It's when we get stuck with the little petty directors down here on Earth. You know, the little tyrants in every aspect of life, telling you who you are and who you aren't. Doesn't it happen all the time? You know, who you are, what you're good for, what your worth is, your value, judging you, telling you are this, nailing you down, putting you in boxes, because that's one thing humans, fortunately, are very good at, is making boxes and putting things into them. But no. Don't fall into anyone's box. You don't fit. You don't fit into any box. There's no box that you will fit in. If you really look closely, there's always going to be some part of you that sticks out. You know? No container will ever hold you in your entirety. And even just a drop of you, it doesn't fit. I'm sorry. But our boxes are inadequate. Each of us has that power to play our role. And that's the long and the short of it. That's what I take from that piece. But while I've been ranting, the card that Dan has actually drawn, which I'm holding now in my hand, is the High Priestess. One of the most beautiful cards in a tarot. That there's no doubt. Who is the High Priestess? Who is she? If you think about what the essence of the tarot is, and this is a good connection here. What is the tarot but a number of masks or costumes or, you know, archetypes, is one way of putting it. And an archetype is basically the same entity, you know, wearing different clothes or different costumes in different times. The tarot is the archetypes, the costumes, the masks that the universe wears and shows to us. That's all they are. Those cards are 72 costumes that the universe veils itself in, that we understand it through. Nothing more inherent than that, but nothing less either. And in the same way, each of those cards, and especially the major arcana, the trumps, each of the trumps is an actor. You know, let's think about, you know, what we're doing when we shuffle these cards and draw them out. We're telling ourselves a story. That's what any tarot reading is, essentially a story. It's a drama, and it unfolds as we pull out the cards, and every time it's a little bit different. And, you know, sometimes certain actors are in it, sometimes it's other actors. The Fool, classic. What great drama, what play has not a fool in it? There isn't one. I don't think there's one. Or otherwise, it doesn't qualify as a piece of drama, in my opinion. The Fool is an essential archetype, an essential character, an actor.
Wouldn't be much of an adventure without an adventurer.
Exactly. The Fool, the Magus, the Emperor and the Empress, the High Priestess, the Devil, Death, the Hermit, the Lovers. It sounds like a play to me, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound like a play or a drama to you? So, Dan, what do you feel? You drew the High Priestess.
Yes.
So as far as this actress is concerned, her, what do you think is her relevance to this discussion we've been having?
The relevance being that we were talking about the nature of letting go of insecurities and living your life. And when I see a card like the High Priestess or an archetype like that, it was showing me that the intuitive wisdom to be followed here is just that. That just as the recession has proven that things aren't so secure as people thought when they chose these careers, that things in life are not perfect, no matter how safe and secure you think you're going to be. It can all be an illusion, and it can all come crashing down anyway, so you might as well live for your passion. And that living for your passion and networking, which was, I drew the equivalent, I drew two Horizon Oracle cards, and the other one was the Bloom card. And the Bloom card is, just as it sounds, productive happiness, allow it to flourish.
It makes me think of someone holding on to a big thing of a whole bunch of strings of balloons and floating up to the next level.
Yes, by just letting it happen, by letting go and letting your passions happen and letting things, putting your own effort into it, but not becoming too emotionally attached, which is very difficult, to the results or potential abundance. But just understanding that the fact that you're living your passion is part of the abundance. Sort of, it's its own reward in some ways.
Now, and some of the words you're using there really do resonate with the essence of the High Priestess card. One of those is emotions, you know, and like you said, we cannot get caught up in the strings of our emotions. But the High Priestess, in my intuitive experience of the card, is a very emotionally driven card.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's connected with the moon, which is, you know, the ruler of emotions in the human psyche. That, you know, that component of the psyche, you know, are the fluctuating emotions. you know, the moon is that ruling archetype. And the other word you just said is abundance.
Mm-hmm.
That, in my opinion, is the other perfect word to associate with High Priestess, because she is the essence of fertility, also connected with the moon and the harvest, you know, and the fertility rites. So, you know, that's the role that she plays. And, you know, if you think about, this just occurred to me while I was saying that right now. If you think about how a high priestess, not the card, but, you know, in human life, any priest or priestess, these are human beings, you know, same as you or I. A priest or a priestess is not any different from a layperson, essentially, right? We're all human beings. We all have a heart, liver, two eyes, nose, ears, and a frontal cortex. So, but but there's no denying that there is something almost fundamentally different about a priest or a priestess from a layperson. So, where does that essence lie? Like, what is it that distinguishes them? You know, you could say, well, they've taken vows, they wear different clothes, you know, they abstain from certain things, they live in monasteries or ashrams, you know, all that sort of thing. But, you know, those are all surface level differences. I don't think those are essential differences. That's just like, you know, the outward appearance of it. If you ask me, I think what the essential difference lies in the fact that they have taken a different role in life upon the stage. You know, as actors, they've chosen for themselves the role of priest or priestess. Just like we all choose, you know, choose our different roles in life. You know, athletes, Olympians, you know, they're playing a certain role upon the stage of life. Musicians, poets, romantics, you know, CEOs, you know, policemen, military men, generals, presidents. Everyone a different role. You know, and, you know, we feel like there's these, like, essential differences between, you know, different people depending on the roles that they play. But it's not... You would say a difference in the soul. It's a difference in, you know, how it's played on the stage. It's a difference in, you know, performance. And it's very good that we're all playing different roles, because otherwise it'd be pretty boring. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I mean, what if we're just all gonna, you know, all human beings play the same exact role? That wouldn't be very fun at all. We need storytellers. We need generals. You know.
Farmers.
Farmers. Maybe even a dictator here and there to make it interesting. God, as much as I hate saying that. But, you know, as far as it, you know, I can tell and how I make sense of the world, like, there's some truth to it.
They're there to test us.
Right.
Part of the obstacle.
So, the long and the short of it, that was fun. And let's not forget what the great mythologist Joseph Campbell always tells us. Follow your bliss, wherever that may lead you. And now, how about some more gypsy stories? Yes, please. This one is called, a very informative story, Why the Gypsies Are Scattered About the Earth. This happened long ago. A gypsy and his family were traveling along. His horse was skinny and none too steady on his legs. And as the gypsy family grew, he found it harder to pull the weighty wagon. Soon the wagon was so full of children, tumbling over one another, that the poor horse could barely stumble along the rutted track. As the wagon rumbled on, veering first left and then right, and always rocking back and forth, pots and pans would go tumbling out, and now and then, even a barefoot child was pitched headlong onto the ground. It was not so bad in daylight, when you could pick up your pots and your tiny children, but you could not see them in the dark. In any case, who could keep count of such a tribe? And the horse plodded on its way. The gypsy traveled right around the earth, and everywhere he went, he left a child behind, more and more and more. And that, you see, is how the gypsies came to be scattered about the earth. What an image. Little gypsy children falling out of a stumbling wagon drawn by an old horse. All right, now another short little whimsical tale that tells a essential truth about the gypsies and how they live their lives. This one, I can find the page, it's called Why the Gypsies Don't Have an Alphabet. Once there was a king, and he had the gypsy alphabet. He wrapped it in some cabbage leaves, since in those days they didn't have any bookshelves to put things on, and he fell asleep next to a spring. A donkey came along, drank some water, and ate the cabbage leaves. And that, my friends, is why we don't have an alphabet. Okay, so that explains it. I was always wondering. The king wrapped it in cabbage leaves and a donkey ate it. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Good to know.
Yes.
Live and learn. Live and learn. Something new every day.
Don't put your archives on something edible, I guess.
Yeah, if you got donkeys stumbling around, they will eat anything, folks. Goats, too. You read my mind, Dan. I was about to say, donkeys are bad. Goats are probably worse. If you wrap that thing in cabbage leaves, you've got goats around, you might as well kiss it goodbye. If you lose it, you deserve it.
And those tales, the origins of those tales are?
Well, the first one, Why the Gypsies Are Scattered About the Earth, is from Russia.
Oh, okay.
And the second one is from Greece. But these all are authentic gypsy tales.
Right.
These aren't stories about gypsies. These are, you know, by others. These are stories about gypsies, by gypsies.
Yes.
And
they're
an excellent collection called Gypsy Folk Tales. You know, that's been just collected from, you know, gypsy storytellers from all over the world. I really enjoy how it has all the different countries that they come from, because truly, you know, there's tales that come from all over, and it has each country, you know, from India to the United States. You know, gypsies telling their gypsy stories all along the way, all along the Romani Trail. Now, I have a story, as I mentioned before, by the great science fiction writer Norman Spinrad. Definitely a favorite of mine. His book, Child of Fortune, is probably more than any other book what catalyzed, what lit my absolute love for science fiction literature. I didn't know I felt that way before. What it comes down to is I didn't realize what you could do with the genre. You know, I never considered myself much of a science fiction fan. I never watched the science fiction sci-fi channel. I wasn't really much into sci-fi movies. You know, well, maybe they'd make some better ones. There's a couple of good ones out there. There are, but, you know, honestly, like, the state of, you know, science fiction in the world today, don't look to the movies, look to the literature.
Right now, we're going through this time period where every movie is like one giant car chase and explosion. You know, they just like suck the story and life out of, even if it's an already good existing story, or even a good new one with potential. And then all of a sudden, here you are with this, you know, and everything is just special effects. And, oh, wow, there was, you know, did you see that part where the guy got his head chopped off? And, you know, they call that a great movie.
Yep, you know, it's the truth. There's the idea of the story, you know, is I think in especially in the realm of cinema, there's just like losing sight of that. We've got all these new toys with special effects and sound effects and explosions and laser beams and, you know, computer graphics, and, you know, suddenly the story's gone. It's just a bunch of, you know, a bunch of erratic imagery.
I remember in the old days, and I'll let you get on what I'm saying, but I remember the science fiction was so unique and interesting and odd, and it could sometimes be a really slow-moving thing with a really just, I remember one of them, it was like this guy, he's walking around, and everywhere he goes, there's like this person there just staring at him, and he can't figure out what the heck this person is. Just like wacky stuff like that, you know, that would never fly now or one where a guy discovers a strange book, and it appears that the book is written not with paper, but some other kind of like metallic thing and that seems like paper. And it turned out to be instructions for building a machine from another cosmos or something, you know. And they would just do all this, it was all about these wacky concepts and ideas that related to human archetypes, I guess you could say, to quicken that. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so, you know, it took me a while to get into this genre. But, you know, now that I found it, there's no going back at this point because, you know, whether or not it's utilized by the majority of, you know, writers and filmmakers out there, there's something about the science fiction and fantasy genres that this have so much potential to them. They're so deep. There's so much there that can be utilized. You know, so, you know, it's that potential. And I think Norman Spinrad is one of the greats in that. He was actually, for a few years, was the president of the Science Fiction Writers of America, I think it's called. You know, basically the Guild of Writers, the Guild of Science Fiction Writers in the United States. So he's not always, he's not one of the more well-known science fiction writers. In fact, he's kind of hard to find some of his books. And most people aren't familiar with him. But he's definitely, you could say, like a writer's writer, you know. Mm-hmm. The authors definitely know him. And, you know, within that circle, he's very beloved. And a great tale here from his collection, The Last Hurrah of the Golden Horde. This is called The Last of the Romani. It's been a long, hot journey, said the man with the waxed mustache. A Collins, please, bartender. The fat bartender reached over the console, punched the Collins button, and asked, Gin, rum, vodka, or Grahui? Gin, of course, said the man with the waxed mustache. A Grahui Collins indeed. He lit up a large olive green cigar. The bartender punched the gin button and tapped the serve bar. The clear plastic container of cloudy liquid popped up through the serving hole in the bar. The man with the waxed black mustache looked at the drink, then at the console, and then at the bartender. "Do not think me rude, my friend," he said, "but I've always wondered why there are still bartenders when anyone could push those silly buttons." The bartender laughed, a fat, good-natured laugh. "Why are there bus drivers on robot buses? Why are there brewers when the beer practically brews itself? I guess the government figures that if everyone who is unnecessary was fired, they'd have 100 million unemployed on their hands." The man with the mustache, who called himself Miklos, toyed with the battered guitar, which leaned against the bar. "I'm sorry, my friend, for the remark," he said. "Actually, bartenders are still useful. Could I talk to that machine? They still don't have an automatic bouncer." "Oh," said the bartender, leaning close to Miklos. "I was in Tokyo last year, and there they have a great padded hook that drops from the ceiling, grabs a drunk, and heaves him out the door, all untouched by human hands." "Ah, science." Miklos scowled, then brightened. "Ah, but the bartender must still decide who to bounce. A very delicate task, not to be trusted to a machine. Therefore, a bartender will always be necessary. Another Collins, please." "Why are you so concerned with my usefulness?" asked the bartender, punching out another Collins. The man with the waxed black mustache and the weather-tanned face became very serious. "It's one of the things I search for in my travels," he said. "It is very important." "What is?" "Men who are still useful," said Miklos. "They are like rare birds. When I spot one, it makes my whole day. I'm sort of a people watcher." "You travel a lot?" asked the bartender with a little laugh. "You must be one of those idle rich." "No," said Miklos without smiling. "It's part of my job to travel." "Job? What kind of job? There are no more traveling salesmen, and you hardly look like a pilot." Miklos puffed thoughtfully on his cigar. "It's a hard thing to explain," he said. "Actually, there are two jobs. But if I succeed in one, the other is unnecessary. The first job is to search." "To search for what?" The man with the waxed mustache picked up his guitar and fiddled with the strings. "To search," he said, "for the Romani." "The what?" "The Romani man, the gypsies." The bartender gave him a queer look. "Gypsies? There aren't any gypsies left. It wouldn't be permitted." "You're telling me?" said Miklos, sighing. "For 14 years, I have searched for the Romani. I've hitched when nobody hitches. And I've bummed when nobody bums. I've looked in 50 states and 6 continents. I even went to the Spanish caves. And do you know what? They have a big mechanical display there now. Robot Romani. Flamenco machines. The things even pass a metal hat around. But the Romani are gone. And yet, someday, somewhere, maybe you could, perhaps you would." "Me?" said the bartender, drawing away from the man with the mustache. "Ah, but of course not. Nobody knows, and of course, everyone thinks I'm crazy. But let me tell you, my friend, crazy is strictly relative. I think you're all crazy. Nothing personal. You understand. It's this dry, clean, shiny, Romani-killing world that's crazy. But come close, and I'll tell you in on a secret." Miklos stuck his face in the bartender's ear. "They have not killed the last Romani," he whispered, then louder. I am the last Romani. That's the other job. To keep it alive until I can find them. It's a good joke on the world. They try to kill the Romani, and when they fail, they try harder. But it is good of them that they do not succeed. For it is the Romani that keeps them alive. They do not know it, but when I am gone, they will die. Oh, they'll walk around in their nice antiseptic cities for a few hundred years before they realize it. But for all practical purposes, they'll be dead. Sure, said the bartender. Sure. The man with the waxed black mustache frowned heavily. I'm sorry, he said. Sometimes I forget that I'm crazy, and then I become crazier. I need paradox, no? You sound like an educated man, said the bartender. A not stupid man. How come you can't get a job? Miklos raised his head proudly. Can't get a job? Sir, before I became Miklos, the last Romani, I was assistant vice president in charge of sales for General Air Conditioning. I am a moderately wealthy man. I know what success is in this boring world. You can have it. But with your money, bah, I wanted to see the exotic Orient, for example. So what was there? Tokyo is New York. Hong Kong was Chicago. Macau, Philadelphia. Far Samarkand is now a Russian rocket port. It's all gone. The Baghdad of the Caliphs. The China of Kublai Khan. Far Samarkand. Cairo. Oh, the cities are still there. But so what? They're all the same. All neat and clean and shiny. You ought to be glad, said the bartender. They cleaned up the opium traffic and the prostitution. They licked malaria and the yellow fever, even dysentery. They got the beggars off the streets and built sanitary markets for the street vendors. I was in Tokyo, as I said, and it's every bit as modern as New York is. Miklos snorted cigar smoke. And while they were at it, they replaced the caliphs and the sultans and khans with city managers. Well, said the bartender, you can't please everybody. Most folks like things the way they are. They think they do. Oh, well, I've got things to do. Can you tell me where the playground's at? A playground? You want to play golf or something? No. A children's playground. There's one 3 blocks west of here, said the bartender. Well, what do you want there? It's part of my job, my friend, said Miklos, getting up and hoisting his guitar on his shoulders. It keeps me from thinking too much and doing too little. And besides, who knows? Maybe it does some little good. Goodbye. And he left the bar. Whistling. A nut, mumbled the bartender, tossing the used containers into the disposal. Seems harmless enough, though. The playground was a standard model. One square block, surrounded by a 6-foot fence, with one entrance on each side. In addition to the usual exponential hopscotch board, 4 slides and basketball grid, there is some newer equipment, including a large tri-D and a robot watchman. Most of the children were seated on benches in front of the tri-D, watching Modern Lives, the playground educational series. They seemed quite bored, except when, as a stop to the frivolity, someone was hit over the head. The man with the waxed black mustache and the battered guitar walked through the gate. He was noticed only by the robot watchman. Sir, rasped the robot, are you a parent or guardian of these children? Miklos blew a smoke ring at the robots. No. Peddlers, beggars, salesmen, roller skates, pets, and children over 12 years of age are forbidden in the playground, said the robot. I am not a peddler, beggar, salesman, roller skate, bicycle, pet, or child over 12, said Miklos, who knew the routine. Are you a sexual deviant? Asked the robot. Sexual deviants are prohibited from the playground by law and may be forcefully removed. I am not a sexual deviant, said the man with the mustache. Predictably, the robot stood there for a few minutes, relays clicking confusedly, and then rolled away. Miklos entered the playground, threw away his half-smoked cigar, and sprawled himself on the last bench in front of the tri-D. He strummed a few random chords on a guitar and sang a staccato song in Spanish. His voice was harsh, and his playing, at best, passable. But both were loud and enthusiastic, so the total effect was not unpleasing. A few of the younger children detached themselves from the group around the tri-D and grouped themselves around Miklos' bench. He went through Santa Ana, some very amateurish flamenco, an old Israeli marching song. By the end of the marching song, all but the eldest children had gathered around him. He spoke for the first time. My name is Miklos. Now, my friends, I will sing for you a very nice little song about a very nasty fellow. It is called Sam Hall. When he got to the part of the chorus which goes, You're a bunch of bastards all, damn your eyes. The robot came rolling over at top speed, screeching, Obscenity is forbidden in the playground. Forbidden. No child must say naughty words. No obscenity. Will the child who said the bad words please stop? I said the bad words, you pile of tin, laughed Miklos. Please stop using obscenity, croaked the robot. Obscenity is forbidden to children. Miklos lit a cigar and blew a huge puff of smoke at the robot. I am not a child, you monstrosity. I can say what I please. He grinned at the appreciative audience. Relays clicked frantically. Are you a sexual deviant? Are you a beggar, salesman, or peddler? Are you a child over 12? We went through this already. I'm none of those things. Get out of here before I report you for interfering with the civil rights of an adult human. More relays clicked frantically. There was a slight smell of burning insulation. The robot wheeled off, careening crazily. He stopped about 100 yards away and began to mumble to itself. Miklos laughed. The children, all of whom were now clustered about him, roared with him. Ah, ha, 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 ha. And now, my friends, he said, let us talk of better things, of pirates and cons and Indians, of the 1,003 white elephants of the King of Siam, of the 7 cities of gold and the great Caliph Harun al-Rashid. Have you been to all those places, mister? Are you a pirate? What's a caliph? Miklos spread his large hands. Wait, wait, one at a time. He smiled. No, I am not a pirate. I am a Romani. What's a Romani? A gypsy, my young friend. Not so long ago, there were thousands of us, rolling all over this world in bright red and yellow wagons, singing and playing and stealing chickens. Now I am the only one left. But I know all the stories, and I know all the places. Have you ever stolen a chicken, mister? Well, no. But I've stowed away on planes, and even on a ship once. You know what that would have meant in the days of the pirates? Sir Henry Morgan would have made me walk the plank. Walk the plank? Yes, he would have stroked his dirty black beard and said, Miklos, ye scurvy bile rat, you'll jump into the dirt, be eaten by the sharks, or I'll run you through with me cutlass. Couldn't you call a cop, mister? Meeple's grimace at the twirled ends of his mustache. A cop! Sir Henry would have ate one of your cups for breakfast. And at that, he'd have gotten off easy. You know what Harun al-Rashid would have done? He would have had his grand vizier turn him into a camel. The older boy snickered loudly. Aw, come on. You can't turn a cop into a camel. I can't. And you can't. And maybe no one today can. But in those days, in Baghdad, why, anyone could. Most of the older children wandered away, but a hardcore of 6 and 7 and 8 year olds remained. You must believe, said Miklos, and then you can do these things. 50 years ago, you could cross the world with your thumb. Now they say it's impossible. But, my little friends, I know better. I have done it. How? Because I am a Romani. I believe, even when they say I'm crazy. Wow, Mr. Romani's is smart, huh? No smarter than you. In fact, you can only do these things if you're a little stupid. Stupid enough to believe that somewhere, sometime, there's still a Baghdad and Samarkand is still far. You must be stupid not to care when the police and the chairman of the board say you're crazy. If you believe hard enough, and you're crazy enough. What, mister? The man with the waxed black mustache sighed. And then he leaned close to the small circle of heads and whispered, if you believe hard enough, and care long enough, and are crazy enough, and become nice and wicked, then someday, you'll get to the Spanish Main, and the Seven Cities of Gold, and the magic city of Baghdad, where there are no robots or schools, only magicians and wild black horses. And someday, you will see far Samarkand, shining white and gold and red above the sands of the desert. And, my little friends, if you are especially dirty and never, never wash behind your ears and only brush your teeth once a day and don't watch the Tri-D and say 4 bad words a day for a month and dream always of the lost far magic places, someday, someday, you will wake up early on a cool autumn morning and you, too, will be a Romani. Miklos picked up his guitar. And now, my little Romani, we shall sing. When he played the old songs and sang of the far places till the sweat dripped onto his mustache. Then he pulled out a red bandana, wiped his face, and played some more. For 2 hours, he played and sang and told the old tales. He was just finishing the story of Atlantis when the cop arrived. The cop was dressed in the usual blue tunic and shorts, and the usual scowl. What the hell's going on here? He said. The robot came wheeling over, moaning, obscenity is forbidden in the playground. Obscenity is... Shut up, said the cop. The robot shut up. All right, bud, said the cop. What do you think you're doing? Just singing a few songs and telling a few stories, said the man with the waxed mustache. You're disturbing a public playground, said the cop. I think I'll run you in. A little spark returned to the man with the mustache. Is that a crime, officer? He said. No, but... Miklos chewed on his cigar. Then I guess you'll be on your way, he said. Not so fast, said the cop. I can still run you in for vagrancy. The man with the mustache grinned, and then permitted himself a large laugh. Ah, ha, ha, ha. I'm not afraid, my friend. No, indeed. I'm afraid not. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a roll of wet, soiled bills. He counted out $200 and shove them under the cop's nose. See, my friends, I am hardly a vagrant. Well, my little friends, he said, turning his back to the cop, I must be going now, before there is any more trouble. And I am tempted to turn this worthy officer of the law into a you-know-what. But goodbye, my friends. Remember the Romani. The children grinned. The cop stood there. The man with the waxed mustache hoisted his guitar onto his shoulder and walked slowly out of the playground, whistling loudly. The early morning sun shone in through the large picture window, bathing the bar in bright yellow light. The bar was empty, except for the bartender and a young man with a detached, faraway look. The young man, who was wearing the gold and black uniform of a space corps, sat at one end of the bar, staring out of the window and sipping at a beer. Miklos stepped in, the open door admitting a blast of hot air into the air-conditioned room. Hello, my friend, he said, sitting down two seats away from the young spaceman. A beer, please. The bartender pressed beer, and a plastic stein appeared in front of Miklos. Miklos took a long drink. The morning is the best time for a good cold beer, he said. Too bad so few people recognize its beauties. He glanced at the young spaceman. The spaceman gave Miklos a funny look, but not one of distaste. He said nothing and continued to stare out the window. Did you find the playground? Asked the bartender. The spaceman smiled a twisted smile. Of course, said Miklos, lighting a cigar. No trouble at all. That is, except for a cop that tried to chase me away. But he was little trouble. He pointed to his head. Not too bright, you know? The spaceman chuckled softly. You still haven't told me what you did there, said the bartender. The man with the mustache thumped his guitar. I played this, and I sang. I told the kids a few stories. What for? Asked the bartender. The young man got up and sat down next to Miklos. I know what for, don't I? He said, smiling. Miklos laughed. Huh, if you say you do. Say, said the bartender, you're a spaceman. You've been around, no? I suppose I have. Well then, said the bartender, maybe you can help out our guitar friend here. He's looking for something. Oh, said the young man with a faraway stare. He seemed to be suppressing something between a snicker and a grin. Yeah, said the bartender, laughing. Gypsies! Can you believe it? The spaceman did not laugh. He ignored the bartender and turned to Miklos. You are looking for gypsies? Yes, said Miklos soberly. Yes. I am looking for gypsies. For the Romani. Miklos stared hard at him. Yes, the Romani. The spaceman drank the last of his beer. It's a hard thing, he said, to find Romani these days. I know, said Miklos, resting his head in his hands. For 14 years, I've looked. 14 years, 6 continents, and God knows how many countries. It's a long time. A long, sweaty time. Perhaps too long. Perhaps I'm crazy. And there are no more Romani. And perhaps there never will be. Perhaps I should just give up and go back to being a vice president in charge of sales, or go to a psychiatrist, or... I know a place, said the young man. A place? A far place, said the spaceman. A place that no one has yet seen. Alpha Centauri, or perhaps Sirius, or Regal. The stars? Said Miklos. Nobody's ever been to the stars. Indeed, said the young man, smiling. No one has ever been to the stars. What better place to find the Romani? Out there, the land that is not yet in the travel tours, a land that no one has ever seen, the kind of land where the Romani have always gone. Somewhere out there, there are cities that put all the legends to shame, and magic, and wonder. The universe has a billion worlds. Surely, on one of them, there are gypsies. On another, Khans, and on another, ancient Baghdad. A very pleasant picture, said Miklos, lighting a cigar, and probably true. But, unfortunately, it's as possible to go to those worlds as it is to visit ancient Baghdad. Not quite, said the spaceman. On the moon, they're building a faster-than-light starship. First stop, Alpha Centauri. There will be others. Many others. Miklos stood up. A starship! Yes! I'll book passage right away. You wouldn't think of it to look at me, but I'm moderately rich. He stared out the window at the sky. Perhaps I'll find them yet. Out there. Of course, said the young man. It's a government project, like the moon, and Mars and Venus. As they say, there's only room for trained experts. Of course, said Miklos, of course. It's always that way, isn't it? Always machines, or men like machines, always. But no matter. If those ships exist, there is a way on them. If the stars are there, there is a way to bum your way. The Romani exist. Someday, somewhere, I will find them. He stood up and slung his guitar over his shoulder. I'm off for Canaveral, he said, and then to the moon. And then, well, goodbye, and thanks. The man with the waxed black mustache strode out into the sunny street. Huh, thanks, pal, said the bartender. You really got rid of that screwball. You're starting to worry me. You really knew what made him tick. I ought to, said the spaceman. What do you mean? Well, once there was a kid in Springfield, Ohio. In fact, that kid was me. And this kid was like all the other kids in this world. A nice packaged future member of a nice packaged society. And then, one day, maybe 11 years ago, a crazy guy with a mustache blew into town and told that kid a lot of tall tales about a lot of far-off places. Something changed in that kid that day. A very small change, perhaps. But it got bigger and bigger every year. Until now, that little change is the whole person. And here I am, on my way to Centaurus. You mean there's really a spaceship? There sure is. And you know something? Somehow, someday, in some highly illegal manner, that guy is going to get on it. The spaceman looked out the window as if he was already on his way to Centaurus. What'll they do with him when they find him? Asked the bartender. The spaceman looked at him, a strange softness in his eyes. Only a certain rare kind of man can go where no one's ever seen. You can't package that kind of man. You can't grow him in controlled schools or mold him on canned dreams. You've got to beat him and kick him and laugh at him and call him crazy. And if someone has whispered certain things in his ear at a critical time, you have a man who will go to the stars. The young man glared at the bartender. What will we say to him when we find him on the ship? What else? But welcome, Miklos. Welcome home. And so you have it. The tale of the last of the Romani. You know, there's a lot of things in there that we could bring up that we talked about earlier in the show. But, you know, that's that little tale, and, you know, it's not the greatest short story in the world. It's not, you know, the most perfectly written piece. But that is not what Spinrad's going for here. You know, Spinrad is what we call a master storyteller. And this is a very masterful story, if you ask my opinion. You know, there's just something about it. It's a way of seeing the world. It's that song that plays in the soul. You know? It's truly a story for our times, for our ears. You know? In a day and age when all the magic seems to have dried up and disappeared, all those far-off places of legend and lore, how can we get to them in this sterilized, cookie-cutter existence that we lead? You know, just everything, the daily grind, that antiseptic aesthetic.
Sterile.
Sterile that he speaks of. You know, where's the passion? Where's the story? You know, and this is from the 70s, I believe. It's kind of an old story, you know. Spinrad definitely saw it coming. And, you know, the thing about it is that the man with the waxed black mustache in this story, if I'm interpreting it correctly, is not, you know, a born Romani of Romani blood. You know, he's just like anyone else, like you or me. He was a assistant vice president of an air conditioning company. But, you know, this is a story about essence. You know, he had the dream. He dreamed of gypsies, and he just couldn't do it anymore. He had to leave that day job and follow the trail over the world and back again. And so we come to the end of this little episode, Zariana Radio. And Dan has drawn another card for you.
It was out of Kevin's Horizon Oracle deck, the one that our friend Kevin Baird created. He was here earlier today in the chat room, and it was this Waze car, which I thought was cool because you were talking about gypsy stuff, and it's like a road sign. He's leading all over the place, so it's like possibilities. You know, it's up to you. Like you said, he wasn't born a gypsy. He made himself into a gypsy.
If there's any gypsy card in that deck, surely that is it.
Yes.
And so we come to the end. Another wonderful episode. It has been lovely sharing these stories, these pieces of verse, these thoughts that build up in the mind, and really, you know, clog my cognitive arteries so I can share them with the world. Whoever may be listening, I know you're out there, folks. So, until next time, until next week, this has been Zariana Radio. Blessings, blessings, blessings on the path.